Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. Folklore in various countries and various cultures centers around birds and what they mean to human beings. Dr. Patricia Gately, who is an associate professor of English at MTSU, has been looking lately into the folklore surrounding birds and their relationship to human grief. We'll talk with her about this, about what she's found, and her continuing exploration of this subject, after we have a few words from MTSUnews.com.
Here are a few of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. MTSU has entered into an historic educational partnership with the U.S. Army and Marine Corps to study ways robots on the ground can be used with unmanned vehicles in the air. The three-year pact between the MTSU Unmanned Aircraft Systems Program and the two military branches is the first of its kind. And alumnus Justin Oakes was proclaimed International Auctioneer Champion at the 63rd International Auctioneers Conference and Show, July 17th through the 21st in Spokane, Washington. The 33-year-old Oakes lives in Hendersonville, Tennessee. He earned a master's degree in animal science at MTSU in 2007. For MTSU News at any time, go to mtsunews.com. Again, that's mtsunews.com.
Dr. Gately, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
Now, you teach literature and folklore, but what got you interested in this particular area of how different cultures have developed folklore over the centuries regarding birds and grief?
What happened was, obviously, I study folklore and teach folklore, and there's this tradition within folklore called the revenant, which is the belief that after somebody has passed away, they can come back, if you like, and make contact with loved ones left behind. And usually their role is to bring comfort or acceptance or to maybe warn them about something. But there's some positive role involved in all of this. And that's a concept that we have in folklore. And the weird thing was, I'm a bird fanatic. I love birds. Anything to do with birds is right up my alley. And over a period of about 2 or 3 years, I found people sharing stories with me, totally unsolicited, in which it appeared that the bird was acting as a kind of revenant in their life. I had 3 people share stories with me about how they felt that a bird represented in some way or symbolized a lost loved one for them. And I wasn't even looking for these stories. And I thought, well, I wonder what would happen if I did start looking for these stories and started asking people for their experiences. So I put something out on the Daily News Journal and started getting responses from people and have just been going from there, really.
So, can you tell us the 3 stories?
Sure. The first one was in a card shop, and I was just talking to a woman about birds, because that happens to me a lot. And I had a picture of me and a cardinal, and I showed it to her, and she said, oh, that reminds me of just after my mother had died. There was this cardinal that kept coming around the house, and I just felt that it was my mother reassuring me and letting me know, you know, after she had died, that she was still around for me and she was still kind of part of my life. And that was the first one. And then the second one, I'd taken one of my birds, a parakeet, to the vet's office, and a lady came in and saw the parakeet in the cage and said, oh, that reminds me one time of when I came back from a funeral of a friend. And as I got back to the house, there was a parakeet outside my door. And I thought, well, that's a strange thing. But in a sense, it seemed to me like it was the person that we'd just been to the funeral of, letting us know that she was still around and she was okay.
It's strange for the parakeet to be outside.
Well, yes, absolutely. That's a very odd thing. It must have been somebody's pet escaped or something. It was very strange. And then the third one was a person I worked with who was wearing an owl pendant. And because I like birds, I just said to her, oh, that's an unusual pendant. That's really nice. And she said, oh, there's a story behind this. And by this time, I wasn't surprised. I thought, of course there is. And so she shared the story about how after her father had passed, an owl started appearing. And, you know, she didn't really believe it was physically him, but it just seemed like it was his way of staying in touch. And I remember she said something like, you know, if my father were a bird, he would be an owl. and it just kind of made sense to her. So those were the three initial stories that got my interest, and it just went from there.
Now, these are all obviously 21st century stories.
Right.
Have you been able to ascertain whether these relevance were in place in ancient cultures as well?
Apparently, there's been a long tradition of birds being connected with spirits passing from this world to the next, or however you want to word it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea of the bird taking the soul from the material to the spiritual, I guess because they do have the gift of flight and, you know, can kind of come down from out of the sky mm-hmm. and interact with us and then take off again.
The concept of they were coming from heaven or going up to heaven.
Yes, absolutely, or at least to the heavenly realms or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I also found recently something I didn't know was that Dante Rossetti believed that his, I think it was Lizzie Siddle, was his wife that he lost fairly young, and believed for 2 or 3 years that she was coming to him, her spirit was coming to him in the form of a chaffinch, a little European bird, and you know, spoke quite often about this, and did a painting called, I think it was Bella Beatrix, alluding to this, you know, that his wife was in contact with him after her death through the form of a chaffinch.
Oh.
So it's fairly cross-cultural.
The three people with whom you spoke, do you happen to know their particular religious affiliations?
No, but many of the people I've been fortunate enough to interview since those stories, I've asked them, you know, is this part of your belief system? Is this something you would anticipate? And for the most part, it isn't. They're kind of surprised by it. You know, they certainly don't anticipate the loved one appearing in that form or contacting them in that form.
I don't recall any compatibility about this, particularly with Christianity, except that it was the dove who brought the branch to Noah to let him know that the floodwaters would recede and that land was nearby.
Right, right. And then there is also an Old Testament story of somebody being fed by ravens. I can't remember who that is. And then, of course, in the New Testament, you do get the Holy Spirit appearing in the form of a dove at the baptism of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's that far out of our realm of expectation, you know, in a Judeo-Christian society as we might think it is.
Mm-hmm. Is it part of our tendency, do you think, to anthropomorphize animals anyway, to give them human names, human tendencies, human qualities? The dove is supposed to be the bird of peace.
Mm-hmm.
The eagle is supposed to be the bird of American valor and potency, and
mm-hmm.
the owl is supposed to be the bird of wisdom. Are we just, in our own egotistical way, imposing our own humanity on our fellow creatures?
We may be. I think that's certainly debatable. We may be. And I don't really know where to go with that. But I think we do have a tendency, particularly in our culture, to do that, to see animals as wanting to relate to them in some way rather than just see them pragmatically.
We might get into how that manifests itself in folklore with other types of critters as well as we continue the subject with Dr. Patricia Gately on MTSU on the Record.
Women in Science and Engineering, or WISE, helps college women prepare for and become involved in science-related careers. WISE nurtures women's interest in these fascinating and critical fields and provides mentoring and networking opportunities. The group's main goal is to assure women of their importance in all scientific and technical fields and to promote equal opportunity and treatment of women in science. I'm Dr. Judith Iriarte-Gross, WISE Advisor.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Dr. Patricia Gately, Associate Professor of English, who teaches literature and folklore classes and freshman composition here at MTSU, and has recently begun discovering or diving into the subject of folklore regarding birds and grief, and birds in the form of reincarnated loved ones who have gone to the great beyond. Do you find any folklore regarding other animals as well, coming back as reincarnated loved ones?
There is There is folklore on that. There are stories, but I've been focusing so strongly on the bird aspect of it that I haven't really explored beyond that.
That's because you love birds so much, and you're wearing a bird necklace right
yes.
now. It's a yes, little yeah. silver figurine of a bird there. Has anything like this ever happened in your own life?
It hasn't, not in the slightest. I mean, I'm very aware of birds. If I ever have a fender bender, it will be because I'm looking at a bird, you know. but I've never had an experience like this. And strangely, I did wonder, one of my pet birds died last year. And I wondered if some human would show up and kind of be representative of my bird. But no, I've never had an experience like this. I don't know whether I would expect it too much or what the deal is. And I've lost loved ones. It's not as though I've not had that experience.
What do you do if one of your birds dies? Does he come back as a human?
Not happened yet. Although I'm still open to the possibility.
How do folk tales get started anyway? Are they exaggerations of real life stories, or are they just stories people make up?
That's a good question. I think oftentimes they are... Whether they're just made up or not, I'm not sure. But I think the way they develop is out of our need to make sense of things that we can't necessarily make sense of. Even if you look at creation stories, just about every culture has one, because we need to figure out how we got here. And so when it comes to things like what happens to people after they die, we need some frame of reference, whether it be a religious frame or a narrative story frame. And sometimes it seems like those would be contradictory, and sometimes they are, but it seems like we can accommodate them somehow to meet our needs.
Now, Emily Dickinson, the poet, wrote, I'm misquoting the poem here, but that at death a formal feeling comes
mm-hmm.
In an attempt to make sense or to bring order to things. But folk mm-hmm. tales are not necessarily always rigidly structured. I mean, sometimes right. they're in fact quite whimsical.
Yes.
Babe the Blue Ox and Paul Bunyan, Casey Jones, stories like that in American folklore fulfill our need for heroes.
Right, right.
As you and I were discussing before, there was a made-for-television movie starring Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy some years ago called To Dance with the White Dog.
Yes.
In which one of the spouses believed that the deceased spouse had come back in the form of this white dog. And I guess the skeptic or the scientist or the person who is more prone to science than sentimentality would say, well, these are just people in mourning searching for a way to alleviate their pain, and it doesn't necessarily have to be reality-based. Do you think that's true?
I can understand where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of people I've had the privilege of interviewing have said, I don't really think this is my dad, mm-hmm. who's an owl. I honestly don't think, you know, he's been reincarnated as an owl.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in their head, they don't think this is a reality, but
they're trying to make some kind of spiritual connection. At the same time, yeah. they don't want to sound like they've gone crazy.
No, no. And in fact, one of the responses I had via email was, when I read you're looking for these stories, I nearly fell off the couch, because I'd had this, but I didn't think anyone would take it seriously or believe me, or they would think I'd lost my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to know there are other people out there that've had the same kind of experience.
Have you gotten to, or would you like to explore what, say, Asian cultures might have to say on the subject, or African cultures might have to say? They might have a much different perspective on it than the westernized, industrialized nations.
Right. It would be interesting to do that, because I think I would find a greater openness to the possibility of these occurrences, and less skepticism. But I might be, you know, speaking out of turn. I'm not sure if that would be the case.
Is it because we've gotten so far away from our agrarian roots that we have less direct contact with nature? The majority of us live in cities in the United States of America. We don't have as much contact, certainly, with wildlife
right.
as our ancestors did. So, you know, have we, because of that, lost touch with this type of folklore?
I think to a degree we have, but I think it's still there. I think there's kind of official belief systems that we acknowledge and talk about, and then there are unofficial belief systems that maybe catch us by surprise, mm-hmm. or that are part of our background and we're just not aware of them until, you know, we come into contact with something like this. But I do think there has been a disconnect because we are less in touch with nature these days. Yes, I would agree with that.
Do we dare create our own folklore in the 21st century? And if we did, who would believe it?
Well, I think we do it all. I think we create it all the time, actually. I think the thing with folklore is it's constantly changing. It's not static. Every time a song is sung, it's sung slightly differently. Every time a pot is made, it's slightly different from the one before. Every time a story is told, there are slight changes made. I do think we create and recreate constantly our personal myths and our folklore and the things that help us make sense of things.
We'll have more with Dr. Patricia Gately after this. It's MTSU on the Record.
The MTSU Educational Talent Search, or METS, reaches out to students in grades 6 through 12 in Coffee, Grundy, and Warren counties. We provide youngsters who have college potential with educational and financial aid counseling and guide them as they determine their educational and career goals. More than 95% of Educational Talent Search students graduate from high school, and more than 79% enroll in post-secondary education. This is METS Coordinator Debbie Frisbee.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking about folklore, particularly the folklore of birds and grief and the relationship between the two, with Dr. Patricia Gately, Associate Professor of English. Is there something about the variety of bird songs that plays into this type of folkloric belief? Birds sing for a lot of reasons, to attract mates, to warn about man being in the area. But in this folklore that you're talking about, do we interpret that as happy songs meant to console, sad songs meant to commiserate?
Well, that's interesting, because a lot of the accounts I've been getting haven't mentioned so much the song.
But that's what we know birds for. That's why we love birds, because
yes.
They sing to us, or they sing to themselves. They sing as part of their existence.
Yes.
They don't sing to us, but we enjoy their songs.
But I'd not even noticed that wasn't really part of what people were mentioning. It was the presence, the physical presence, rather than the sound or the song of the bird. That's really interesting. But it may be that we take that as some kind of consoling, happy, reassuring way of things. But somebody talked about a crow that kept cawing and drawing their attention, and I guess that's not usually considered a particularly attractive sound.
No, so. That's more like cacophony than it is.
Right.
But you know what I mean. When we grieve, music is so much a part of the funeral,
right.
So much a part of the memorial service.
Right.
You know, songs do console, songs do soothe grieving people. And
yeah.
I couldn't help but think of that when you told me about people thinking that a bird might have come back into their lives as a representation of their deceased loved one.
Yeah, it's a factor I really haven't looked at yet. I'll certainly be more aware of it when I'm looking at future accounts.
Yeah.
But it really isn't something that people emphasize. Yeah, it's usually just the surprise that they would even think in this way.
How do you do research on a subject like this? Where do you start?
What
do you dig into?
This was the problem. Finding background research was difficult because I didn't know whether to look under grief or birds or stories or mourning. And I started looking everywhere, and I was looking in all the wrong places. But it came down to folklore of birds. And then somebody gave me some information on the grief process, and I'm still not quite sure what direction to take. But the thing that was most useful to me was our local newspaper, the Daily News Journal, wrote up a little blurb for me asking people to share their stories with me. And what I didn't realize was that was going to go on their website. And what I didn't realize was their website was going to go all over the place. And so without even knowing this was being published, I started getting responses from people in Ireland, and Indiana and Michigan, and not knowing where they were coming from, I would say, is it okay if I interview you? And they said, sure, if you want to come to Ireland. But it just kind of got out there, and then it got on people's websites, and they started discussing it, and it got on Facebook, and there were some discussions going on occult sites and all kinds of things, things I didn't even know were out there.
Have you interviewed anyone via email?
I have, and I've also done some local interviews one-on-one, but I have done some email interviews. And
can you share some of those stories with us?
There've been such a variety of stories, and it's been one of the few projects where my first response is always, I'm so sorry for your loss, which is just a horrible way to start a kind of interview process, because everybody you're talking to has experienced a deep, profound loss.
But it's the human, polite thing to do.
It gets to you after a while when you keep hearing all these sad stories coming to you. But one was with regard to a lady whose friend had killed herself. She was in an abusive marriage and saw the only way out as taking her own life. And a bird didn't actually show up for this lady, but she heard a song on the radio that alluded to a bluebird. And I can't remember the name of the band even, but she'd gone out and gotten a tattoo of the bluebird and the lyrics of the song on her arm, and she sent me a picture of the tattoo. And then there was another lady who'd lost her father, and they'd had a rocky relationship and kind of connected about 6 months before he died. And she had... the one night she didn't go to the hospital to see him was the night that he passed. And, yeah, I know, it's just, it breaks your heart. It really does. And, you know, she was dealing with the guilt of that and the loss of the relationship that they'd had. And I can't even remember the type of bird that came to her. But she was in a city environment, and she said all we ever got was pigeons. And this bird that was totally out of place started showing up, and she made eye contact with it. I mean, she really felt like she made eye contact with the bird, and it was really telling her it's okay. And it almost makes me tear up to think about it, because it's just so poignant. And every time she thinks about it now, you know, she feels that sense of well-being. And more often it's the sense of peace that comes with it that they emphasize more than anything else. And it really does get to me, because there really are some poignant stories. There was another about a couple who had four unsuccessful pregnancies, you know, four miscarriages.
Oh, and I can't even imagine the trauma.
No, and this is why it gets so difficult, you know, to interview some of these people. But they felt that every time they found a feather in an unusual place, that it was representative of one of what they termed their angels.
Just a feather, not the entire bird.
Just a feather, not the entire bird, no.
Do you hear about different types of birds,
yes,
odd types of birds?
Everything from swans to hummingbirds to hawks to...
Even birds of prey.
Yes, yeah. And that seems to play in more with the Native American beliefs, that people have an animal or a bird connected to them, a kind of, not a totem so much, but a spiritual equivalent, if you like.
Because the Native American spirituality is so grounded in Mother Nature.
Yes. But yes, even birds of prey. And like I say, crows, you know, quite loud, aggressive birds.
Yes. So
owls.
That seems like counterintuitive. You would think it would be a gentle bird like a dove or cockatoo. You know, a happy bird, not... a hawk or an osprey or a condor or a vulture.
Right. You know. One was a blue jay, and they're really raucous. I mean,
well, the state bird is the mockingbird.
Right.
And if anybody comes back as a starling, I feel sorry for you, because it's the worst bird in the world. We'll have more on MTSU on the record in just a moment.
The MTSU Department of Art has the newest facility for visual arts in the state, with approximately 50,000 square feet of space, including high-tech computers and computer-driven equipment for multimedia, graphic design, printmaking, sculpture, painting, and ceramics. We feature a visiting artist lecture program and an exhibition program that exposes students to work by national and international artists. This is Jean Nagy, Chair of the Department of Art.
To find out more, visit mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Dr. Patricia Gately who is an associate professor of English, teaches literature and folklore classes, and has been looking lately into folklore surrounding loved ones, people who believe that their deceased loved ones come back as birds. I found this on the internet, and I'd like to share it with you. Sure. It's called the Nest of the Loneliness Birds. It comes from something called the Compassionate Friends newsletter. In some parts of the world, such as the high mountain plains of South America and parts of desert Africa, nests of stones are found. How is it possible that such smooth, round stones, which are normally found in rivers at much lower elevations, could be high on a mountain or in a desert where there are no rivers? A primitive myth explains the phenomenon. The myth says that these are the nests of the loneliness birds. These birds live at high altitudes and are usually seen in silhouette as they scan the earth, searching for a place to lay their eggs. The stones, lying together in a sandy soil, look so much like eggs, you are tempted to pick one up, and when you do, you find that they are heavy, just like the heaviness we feel in our hearts when we are grieving. When a loved one dies, so the story goes, the loneliness birds lay their stone eggs in your heart. You can feel them there, gradually weighing you down, and you live with them for a long time. You become used to carrying this burden within you, and gradually you grow strong. Then one day you wake up and something has changed. The sun is shining and the sky is clear blue. You look around and seem to see your surroundings with new eyes, as if you have been gone for a long time. Even the most mundane objects around you seem to be full of meaning, and you feel light on your feet. Some stories say that during the night the loneliness birds came and took their stone eggs and flew away. Others say that each of the stone eggs has hatched into life, and that when each egg has hatched, the nest is empty and the heart becomes light. This story is about the capacity of the human spirit to heal and to grow through grieving. Where there was once suffering, there is now meaning, soul, a depth to life that was not appreciated before. The idea that the heaviness of the eggs hatches or turns into something else suggests that grief is creative, creating a significant change in the mourner. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
I mean, it's a wonderful story, and the idea of, you know, the stones being turned into something, being used for a purpose, is really interesting. But yes, I think that's very valid. I think anyone who's been through any kind of significant loss, there is a need to make sense of it, and there's a need to have something tangible to be able to use to express it. And maybe our belief systems don't necessarily allow us that, especially in our society. We think if we don't talk about it, it doesn't exist. So people find different ways of expressing it, and I think that exemplifies that really well.
If people would like to share their stories with you, how do they get in touch with you?
They can either send me an email at MTSU. Can I just give out my address?
Sure, please do.
It's P, my initial is P.Gaitley, which is spelled G-A-I-T-E-L-Y, and that's at mtsu.edu. Or else call me at MTSU. The number is 615-898-2857. And if anyone would share their story with me, I would appreciate it very much. And I will treat it with respect. And, you know, if you don't want it shared or you don't want private information shared, I will obviously keep that confidential. So.
And if you happen to be driving and you didn't catch all of that, just go to mtsu.edu, go to the A to Z index, look under E for English, and you'll find Dr. Gaitley's name and contact information on the English department page.
Thank you.
Patricia Gaitley, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.